I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, our panel of political bloggers helps me get ready for this week's Democratic presidential debate. But first, there's one more decision day left in this year's Supreme Court term. Still to be decided, one of the most contentious cases of the session, the question of whether public school districts can consider race when assigning students to schools. Some are calling it the most important case involving the schools since the landmark desegregation case half a century ago. The case before the court was filed in the year 2000 after parents of white students in Seattle, Washington, and in Louisville, Kentucky, complained that their children were denied entry into popular public schools because of their race. In Seattle, district officials included race as a tiebreaker if a school was oversubscribed. Officials said the policy was necessary to create more diversity. In a moment, we'll hear from Dennis Parker, lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union, one of the groups supporting the school district. But first, from her home in Seattle is Kathleen Bros. Bros joined with other white parents to fight the school policy. Kathleen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Why was it so important for your daughter to go to Ballard High School?
My daughter was, denied access to three different schools. And we would have been satisfied with not her first choice, but her second or her third choice, but she was actually assigned to her fourth choice. And that didn't work out, so she actually went to her fifth choice. But the reason we wanted Ballard as our first choice because it is the school that is closest to our home.
How did you know that race was the reason that she was denied? Is it your contention that race was a factor in her not being admitted to any of her top three schools?
Yes. I know that from the paperwork that our attorneys were able to get after we filed the lawsuit. We knew going into the registration period that the Seattle School District used tiebreakers. That was well publicized. We knew that. My daughter did not have a sibling, so we knew that wouldn't work for us. We knew that race would be the second tiebreaker, and we knew that would affect us depending on what school we wanted to go to.
So what was it that made you make the decision to file suit? It's not an easy thing to do.
No, we did not take this upon frivolously, not at all. First of all, because we parents, understood how many kids were in the neighborhoods, and we also knew how many kids would be coming out of the K-8 parochial schools, private schools, who would also be competing for these spots, and the district did not keep track of those stats. So we had an idea that there was a pretty strong idea that there was not going to be enough room for our kids probably in the local high school. And some of us parents started meeting and talking about what to do. Somehow I ended up being the spokesman for the group. I went to a school board meeting, and we told them, they said, look, we know that you use these tiebreakers, and we believe there's going to be a capacity issue, and we would like you to, think about that and, make some changes in the assignment process. And they basically said, oh, don't worry, it'll all work out. We get to the assignment period, or when we received the letters in the mail, which was spring break of 2000, and, the letter indicated that we did not receive our first, second, or third choice.
What do you make of the district's position that diversity is an important educational goal and that these are among the steps that are necessary to ensure that diversity is achieved?
Well, first of all, I want to say that we're not against diversity. We like diversity. We're in the public schools. Our argument is that there is lots of diversity in our schools without using the racial tiebreaker, and that, diversity means more than skin color, and that, the school district was really looking at having a ratio of white versus non-white kids. And the way they used the tiebreaker was clearly a form of discrimination.
But what do you make of the argument that if you rely just on issues around, say, geographic location, like who lives in what neighborhood, that in itself results from a legacy of discrimination that may or may not have been overt, and that, so what do you say?
Okay, first of all, if you live in Seattle and, we're talking about this lawsuit was filed in the year 2000, and now we're in the year 2007, our neighborhoods have changed because people are moving around more. There are no housing restrictions like there once were. It's illegal to discriminate in housing. People are intermarrying. In Seattle, we have an influx of the new North African immigrants, Eastern European immigrants. I mean, Seattle's a port city.
So you're saying that diversity would have happened anyway?
It is, and we know that it has, because if you look at the Seattle School District website and they show the statistics, the demographics, it shows that we do have diversity in our schools. They have not used the racial tiebreaker for 5 assignment periods.
So what happened to your daughter eventually? How did she complete her high school career?
Well, a couple of good things came out of the lawsuit. I believe the pressure of the lawsuit, along with a group called the Magnolia Queen Anne High School Task Force, we were able to get a new high school created. She was in the first graduating class, and I think it ended up being about maybe 50 kids.
Okay.
And
so did that work out for
her? That was a good experience because it was a 15-minute public bus ride from her home. She did get involved in a lot of after-school activities. And because that school was created, one of her friends, who also was denied access to Ballard, she went to private school for 1 year, but when they created the school, she left and came back to the public schools.
Okay. So, Ms. Burris, we're down to our last minute here or so, and I guess I just wanted to ask you, as a parent and as an American and as a person who presumably cares about the community as well as your own daughter, are there any steps you think that schools are justified in taking to advance the cause of diversity?
I think, you know, developing magnet schools, they create a program that parents want. Kids will go to it. Parents will send their kids to the school. And, you know, we really want the Seattle School District to say, okay, we're just going to put all our money, all our time, all our effort into fixing all the schools so every kid has access to a good neighborhood school.
Okay. Kathleen Burris is a Seattle, Washington parent who was among the parents who filed a racial discrimination suit against the public school district in the year 2000. That case is scheduled to be decided this week by the U.S. Supreme Court. She joined us from her home in Seattle. Kathleen Burris, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And good luck to your family.
Thank you.
And now we're going to turn to Dennis Parker. He is the director of the Racial Justice Program of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU supports the school district policy to consider race as one factor when placing students in public schools. He joins us on the phone from New York. Mr. Parker, thank you for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure.
Now, earlier we heard from a parent in the Seattle case. Her argument is that this is just unfair, this is just discriminatory, and the policy needs to stop. What's the ACLU's position?
Well, we think that it is fair, and we think that it's important as an educational and as a social matter that schools reflect the full diversity of the communities that they're located in. And we think that students of all races and all ethnicities are benefited by going to schools that are diverse as opposed to going to schools that are all one race or all one gender.
I think Mrs. Burris's argument is that that diversity would have occurred anyway, and that that argument might be particularly resonant in Seattle, where there was not a previous finding of discrimination on the part of the school district that gave rise to the policy, unlike the case in some other districts right around the country where they were under court order to integrate, Seattle instituted this policy sort of proactively to advance the cause of diversity. And Mrs. Burris's argument is, look at Seattle. Seattle is diverse. This would have happened absent this intervention. What do you say to that?
But the record suggests that Seattle actually is a residentially segregated city. The record suggests that 75% of the district's minority students live in the southern half of the city, while 67% of white students live in the northern half. So already you have a situation where there is existing residential segregation, so that if you have an attendance system that is overlaid on that segregated residential system, you'll have segregated schools.
This is an argument that has been heard that to parents who say, look, you know, I was not a part of that. I did not participate in that. Why is it fair to discriminate against my child or to deny my child something that he or she wants to go to school in the neighborhood with his or her friends because of past actions that I didn't participate in?
This is not a remedy for past discrimination. It's to create diverse schools now and in the future. And there are a few things that you have to realize. Number one is that the choice program was put in place in order to create that kind of diversity and reduction of racial isolation. For most school districts, you go to the school where you live, period, and you don't have the option. But the other thing is There were African Americans who didn't get into their first school of choice, and there are whites and there are Asians. And we think that that's significant because unlike the discrimination that occurred in the 50s where it was consistently, if you're African American, you cannot go to this school no matter what, this does not pick out one race and say you will be treated differently from everyone else. It says that depending on whether or not there's a need for the tiebreaker, you may not get into your first school of a choice. But in fact, the way that it operated, nearly 80% of the ninth graders got into their school of first choice, and most of the other people got in into their second or third choice.
So it's fair in the unfairness.
If it's unfair, it's unfair to everyone equally.
Is there evidence, and I understand that you're a lawyer and not an educator, but is there evidence that the benefit to integrating the schools outweighs the resentment that it seems to engender, as evidenced by these cases?
Well, it's hard for me. I mean, yes, there is research evidence that shows there are benefits that are associated with having schools with reduced racial and ethnic isolation. But I'd also point out that it is not clear to me at all that these plans necessarily create a high level of resentment. I know that in Louisville, Kentucky, there was enormous community support for the plan that's now under review by the Supreme Court. People liked it, and they thought that it was useful. And I've seen similar cases in Massachusetts where the community gets behind the plan because they recognize that it helps bring the community together. So it is not the case that this is something that's being forced down the throat of people who are unhappy with it.
Dennis Parker is the director of the Racial Justice Program of the American Civil Liberties Union. He joined us from New York. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.